Hi again, and welcome to Amron's Podcast, episode 146. Today is Wednesday, March 18th, 2009. Of course, yesterday was St. Patrick's Day, which is probably celebrated the same way here as it is in, say, the U.S. Basically, it's an excuse to get drunk. I did get a little bit tipsy because my sister-in-law came over and we had a few wines, but that's about as far as it went. Typically, people do wear green and they go down and drink lots of beer and whatnot in the bars and pubs, but I've never really been one to do that anyway in any country, so I certainly didn't do it here. But it is very similar to what I was familiar with in the U.S. Now, today I'm going to tell you about a couple of things that you can do to make the world a better place. That's the action part. One of them is a bit political. Don't worry, it's not partisan. It's nothing like that. And the other is a bit different. But first, I'm going to give some updates about some things that I've talked about recently. Now, I was talking last time about a whole bunch of things about New Zealand, including roading. Well, just yesterday, the government announced that it was going to be spending $1 billion on roading, primarily in the Auckland region, but also in Wellington and in some of the points in between. And their goal is to increase capacity and basically finish motorway systems and interchanges and connections and all those kinds of things. Because they say that 70% of the freight in New Zealand is carried by road, and about 84% of New Zealanders get to work by car. And so they feel that they need to spend the money on roading. Well, that isn't going over well with some people. But the main problem is that there's a question of what happens to public transport projects that are already in the works. For instance, Auckland's commuter rail system is being electrified. It's a diesel system right now. And it's unclear who's going to pay to finish that project. The only thing that is certain is the government has announced that the government will buy the electric engines to pull the trains rather than have the ratepayers in the Auckland region pay for it. And it makes sense because the government owns Kiwi Rail, which is our passenger rail system, so they might as well buy those engines as well. But apart from that, we don't really know what's going to happen with anything. There's a new station that's being built in this area called Newmarket, and it's not even clear who's going to pay to finish that. But I suppose this will all come out in time. Also relating to housing, I heard after I recorded that episode that the number of permits given for new houses, construction of new houses, is at a level last seen in 1964. I had no idea that it was that dramatic a drop. And of course, this has a huge flow-on effect throughout the economy, because with so few houses being built, obviously there's no work for the builders and the carpenters and all the other trades that go into building a house. But also, the local governments who issue these permits and consents and so on collect fees for that. And in some of the bigger councils, they're down millions of dollars in lost fees. So, I mean, there's a huge, there are ramifications of this that stretch up and down the economy. However, despite that, the last time that the housing prices were reported, and I'm actually not sure if it was for a month or for a quarter, at any event, it was up slightly. And the experts are saying that it's going to go back down again. Well, of course, I don't know that the experts really know much of anything, but be that as it may, there are fewer new houses being built, and the prices have gone up slightly. So, for whatever that's worth. Also, some time back, I had talked about the big OE, overseas experience, that young Kiwis do. Typically, they go to Britain, sometimes Australia. But they go and live and work there for a year, two, five, whatever. Partly, it depends on how old they are. Well, there was an item in the news yesterday that said that 10,000 young New Zealanders are going to be returning home from the UK this year because the recession has meant that they haven't been able to find jobs or jobs that pay enough to justify staying there, because the cost of living in London in particular is really quite high. And the whole point of living there isn't just so that they can live and work in Britain. It's also so that they can go and see some of Europe. But if they don't have the money to do that, it's kind of pointless. They might as well come home to New Zealand. And that's what many of them are doing. And, of course, they generally do that anyway. They come home to New Zealand after they've done their OE and actually start their lives here, building on their experiences in some cases not. And if you work in a pub or something, then that's probably not transferable to very many other careers. But at any rate, part of the problem for them as well is that in most countries, the citizens are demanding that preference in hiring be given to other citizens and not to foreigners. So they're running into that. Now, Australia is cutting the number of skilled migrant permits that they're giving to foreigners with an eye toward Australians taking those jobs. Now, whether that happens or not, I don't know. And it doesn't affect certain categories, like, say, medicine, for example. So, I don't know. It's not, as I understand the figures, it's not as dramatic a cut as the media made it sound. But I don't know. It is a sort of a typical thing that's been going on in a lot of countries in recent months. Australia is also in a tiz because the manufacturer of the Australian military's floppy hats, which are these hats that you've probably seen pictures of the Australian military wearing them or in movies or what have you, where one side is sort of flipped up and pinned up to the top of the hat. Well, the manufacturer of that is being shipped overseas, and a lot of people are very unhappy about that. Well, the New Zealand military uniforms, the construction of them is also being shipped overseas. There's a company here in New Zealand that had the contract for that, but they've lost it, and those jobs are in danger now. There's only about 70 of them, but the point is that the uniforms for the New Zealand Armed Forces are going to be made overseas, and some people here feel a bit funny about that as well. Although I think it's fair to say that the New Zealanders don't feel as odd about that part as Australians do about the floppy hats being made overseas. But I don't know. Well, now I'm going to go on to the main topics today. And as I said, these are things that you can do to make the world a better place. They're not particularly political, but they are things that I think you should know about. And the first is legislation that's currently before Congress. It's called the Uniting American Families Act. It's H.R. 1024 or S-424. It was introduced on Valentine's Day, I believe it was, or shortly after anyway. And the chief sponsor in the Senate is Senator Patrick Leahy, and the sponsor in the House is Representative Gerald Nadler. And at the time of introduction, there were 80 co-sponsors in the House and 14 in the Senate. The Senate is now up to 15, and the House is up to 90. All of them are Democrats, by the way. Now, over at my blog, I've blogged about this legislation, and if you go there, which is ammons.blogspot.com, on the right-hand side, you'll see the badge that says Immigration Equality, and if you read down, it says, for a regularly updated list of sponsors of the bills, check out the end of this post, and you click on that, and it will take you to a post that I wrote where I listed all of the sponsors of the House and the Senate versions. Now, the reason I did that is you can find that list easily online, especially if you go to Thomas, which is a service of the Library of Congress. But for some reason, they don't tell you the party affiliation of the various members, and I think that it's good to know. So I've added that on there, and I keep updating it as new sponsors come on. But there haven't been any for a week or so, I think. But If you may want to stop by that, and I'll put a link specifically to that post in the show notes. You may want to go there and bookmark it so that you can see who's signing on as co-sponsors. If your U.S. representative isn't listed, my American friends, or your U.S. senators, you might want to send them an email urging them to become sponsors. Here's what it's all about. Under U.S. law, gay and lesbian couples don't exist. We all know that. The Defense of Marriage Act means it's illegal for the federal government to recognize same-sex marriages wherever they're performed. But immigration law is different. It's not subject to DOMA because it has its own rules and its own regulations and so on. Currently, the majority of green cards that are awarded in the U.S. are awarded under family immigration status. But gay and lesbian couples cannot take part in that. So what that means, essentially, is that if there is a binational couple where one partner is either an American citizen or a permanent resident and the other is from another country, they have pretty dim prospects. If the non-American can get a green card on their own some other way, that's good. If they can get a sponsored visa from, say, their employer or something, that's good, although it's temporary. And that's about it, really, apart from something illegal like doing a sham marriage to an American citizen in order to get residence, which I strongly would urge you not to consider, by the way. There's only two other options that are left. One is that the couple breaks up, and that's the end of it. And the other option is what I did, which is to leave the U.S. to be with my partner, because, of course, New Zealand is one of the countries that does recognize same-sex relationships for immigration purposes. in the same way that it recognizes heterosexual relationships. Now it is completely equal. At one time, gay couples had to wait a bit longer, but that's a whole nother story. The thing is that this is a relatively simple and straightforward bit of legislation. The Republicans who say that they're opposed, or some conservative Democrats for that matter, who say that they're opposed to same-sex marriage, but they back civil unions, well, this is sort of a way of making, of putting their mouth, putting their actions where their mouth has been, if you know what I mean. They can act on that pledge. There is provision in the legislation that ensures that the penalty for basically faking it is the same as a heterosexual couple would face. What I have found interesting in the coverage is that there's been a lot of mention of that specifically, as if you know, gay couples are unique in their determination to cheat or something. I don't think that they're deliberately trying to be offensive in saying that, but then it must be a worry that some people have that gay people that couples are going to fake being gay in order to get residence in the U.S., which is just dumb. I mean, what heterosexual would do that when they could just marry an American citizen in a sham marriage? I mean, if they're going to fake it, why don't you do it? Why would they pretend to be gay? But anyway, be that as it may, it's a fairly simple, straightforward bit of legislation. And yesterday, the Washington Post published an editorial in support of the legislation. And I'm just going to read for you the last paragraph of that editorial. It says, "The strain of the status quo on gay and lesbian binational couples should not be discounted. Because their relationships are not legally recognized by the United States, some couples have resorted to illegal marriages where the foreign nationals marry Americans to get green cards that allow them to stay in the country permanently. In other cases, Americans have exiled themselves to be with their partners. 16 countries, including Australia, Brazil, Canada, Israel, South Africa, and the United Kingdom, allow residents to sponsor same-sex permanent partners for legal immigration. American gays and lesbians should not have to choose between their country and their partners. I could not possibly agree more." Now, of course, I've been living in New Zealand for nearly 14 years, 13 and a half odd years, and Nigel and I have deep roots here, and so it's very unlikely that we would choose to move to the U.S. But you never know, and that's not even the point. The point isn't whether or not it affects me personally. It's that as an American citizen, it's my birthright to live in my homeland, and I ought to be able to bring the person I love in with me. It shouldn't be a question of, I can do that only if it's a female that I'm married to. It's just absurd, and it's time that the U.S. sort of, you know, join the rest of the world, or at least the many developed countries that have moved beyond that and now recognize same-sex partners for immigration purposes. So that's my little spiel about that. But just a little side note that's kind of interesting that I've discovered accidentally in this whole immigration debate. If a couple is married in a country that permits that, a same-sex couple is married in a country that permits that, and the foreign national partner comes into the U.S. and puts on their landing form that they're married to a U.S. citizen, it's entirely possible and sometimes even likely that they'll be denied entry because the Immigration Service will think that they're planning on staying in the country illegally because they have, you know, an enduring tie to a U.S. citizen, but they don't have residence. And this is more of an issue, probably more of an issue for same-sex couples than for opposite-sex couples, because an opposite-sex American citizen can always sponsor their partner, whereas a same-sex partner can't. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. Now, of course, in the case of Nigel and me being in a civil union, ours isn't recognized by the federal government for anything anyway. So when the next time we go to the U.S., whenever that is, we will probably have to put single on our landing documentation when we get there, even though in New Zealand we're in a legal relationship. But in terms of what the U.S. government recognizes, it might as well not even exist. So we'll probably have to put single, which is, I think, kind of weird. But that's one action. And the other action I want to tell you about, I'm going to introduce by playing the audio from a TV commercial that's been running here in New Zealand. It's from a video you can actually see on the site for this organization. But first, that commercial.
This year, the world's first global election is taking place. An election between Earth and global warming. It's not about what country you're from, but what planet you're from. Your light switch is your vote. We're aiming for 1 billion votes for Earth, because our planet is worth saving. Vote Earth by simply switching off your lights for 1 hour and join the world for Earth Hour, Saturday, March 28th at 8:30 p.m.
What that's all about is a project called Earth Hour, in which people around the world are asked to turn off their lights for 1 hour between 8:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. local time on Saturday, March 28th. So basically, as the time zone moves around the world, people will be shutting off their lights. The project began in 2007 in Sydney, and in 2008 it spread to the world. And that year, the Golden Gate Bridge was turned off, the lights of the Rome's Colosseum, Sydney Opera House, the Coca-Cola billboard in Times Square, all of those were turned off. This year, they're hoping to get 1 billion people to participate in the project. And what they're planning on doing is essentially treating these as 1 billion votes, which is why they keep talking about Vote for Earth. And they're going to present them to world leaders at the Global Climate Change Conference in Copenhagen later this year. The meeting is trying to come up with a successor to the Kyoto Protocols. And we know that the U.S. administration is sympathetic to dealing to climate change, and so is the Democratic majority in Congress. But they need support. And that's part of what this is all about. It's essentially an easy, simple way for people in countries throughout the world to take a stand saying, we want action on climate change. This particularly affects this region of the world because so many of the Pacific Island nations are barely above sea level, maybe a meter at most. So if climate change accelerates, if the ocean levels start to rise as quickly as is predicted or quicker, those nations could cease to exist pretty quickly. So this is an issue which is particularly important to this part of the world, but it's really important, obviously, to all of us because we only have one Earth. So check it out. I will put links in the show notes to Earth Hour, and the places where you can get questions. There are videos there you can watch. But I think it's something that's worth looking into. And we're planning on participating as well. And I hope you do too. But right now, I need to correct a very big, big, egregious error on my part. And I'm going to do that by playing a voicemail message.
Hey, Arthur, this is Ramble. Just want to leave you a message to say hello. And I love your program. I hope you're doing well. And I just want to say that I love your program. And I just want you to keep up the great work, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks for that, Tom. And sorry I didn't play it sooner. You see, I actually received that about the time that Jason and I were getting ready to record the first episode of Too Political, and I meant to play it on my next Amarin's podcast. Only I forgot, so I had to hold it for this one. And fortunately, it's not about a particular subject, so it didn't matter that much. But I do apologize for not playing it sooner. Tom, of course, is the host of the Ramble Redhead podcast, which you can find a link to on both my blog and my podcast site. He does a lot of really great interviews with people in the GLBT communities and also our allies. And, of course, I was one of the people he interviewed. There's a two-part episode with me, which you can find over at his site. And but he's always been a really supportive friend, and I certainly appreciate his support, and I wish I had played it when I meant to. Oh, well, you can't have everything, I suppose. But speaking of messages, as I've said several times now, the end of the month, the Friday the 27th of March, is my two-year anniversary episode. Nothing really special about it, I don't think, at this stage, but it is my two-year anniversary as a podcaster. And if you want to leave a message, you can at 206-666-5172, or you can email me an MP3 file if you want. Don't feel obligated to. It's as I said, I'm not doing anything terribly special, but if you want to, be my guest. And of course, that will be the last episode I'm going to post to Podomatic. So that's it for today, everybody. I will be talking to you soon. Have a great rest of the week. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amarin's Podcast at amarinspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amarinspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed on a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.